Welcome back to another episode of Legendary Life. Yes, that's the new name. We are no longer the Man Project. And today I have a legend with us. He is a successful entrepreneur. Online, offline, he's a two-time world record holding powerlifter. I just had the pleasure of watching him do a presentation at Changing the Game, which I did an Ask Ted episode on, talking about all the lessons I learned from that. And AJ was just dropping knowledge bomb after knowledge bomb, really motivating people and getting us to see a different perspective of success and what it means. And funny story, I wanted to talk to AJ and get him to come on the show, which he agreed to do. But the way I ended up seeing him was, I was super sick the entire time. One of my clients gave me this respiratory infection, and I ran out of one of the presenter's lectures, and I met AJ in the coffee shop, and I'm just like sitting there trying to get water to take my Dayquil, and he's like, oh, hey, what's up, man? I'm like, oh, AJ Roberts, what's up? And you were so gracious, AJ, to spend some time and talk with me, and I really appreciated it, and we got to connect, and I really, really enjoyed your talk, and also just connecting with you person to person for those few minutes. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. And I love the new name. It's awesome. So I get to be the first guest on the new podcast, I guess, which is really cool.
Yeah, man. And, you know, it reflects the growth I've had over the past year. And we're going to get into your growth because you have this amazing story where you came to the U.S. to play basketball. You came here from the U.K. and you played basketball, but something went wrong. And then you went on to become an athlete, a world record holding athlete in another sport, and then went on to have entrepreneurial success after success, and you're just blowing up. And before we get to that, you have a quote for us. So let's start with that, man, and then we'll get into your story.
Yeah, I often say, you know, it's funny, most people are always seeking approval, always seeking someone else to validate what they believe to be right or they believe to be true or someone else to give them permission to chase their dreams. And I always say, the only person that needs to believe in you is you. And if you believe in yourself with 100% and you know without a doubt what you're focused on, what your dreams are, you're going to make come true. No one else needs to give you permission to chase those dreams, support to chase those dreams, and give you the pat on the back to chase those dreams. If you want to go after something, if you want to achieve something, all you have to do is believe in yourself with unbreakable belief. And if you do that and you know in your heart that you can get to where you want to get to, it doesn't matter about anything or anyone else. You'll figure out a way to get there. And I truly believe that. My whole life's been built around that same philosophy. I've been disproving people, you know, people haters or whatever they call them, over and over and over and over. And, you know, some people say, oh, you're cocky or you're full of it, you know, when you set these crazy goals. And then when you achieve them, they're like, man, that's incredible. How do you do that? And it's like, you know, I do that because I don't have your attitude. And that's all it takes. It just takes that positive attitude. It takes that self-confidence. And, you know, I think that more people, if they just trusted their gut, trusted in themselves, trusted in the way they felt, and didn't worry about anything else or anyone else, they'd be getting a lot more done and having a lot more fun.
Yeah, having that unbreakable belief, like you said, that's amazing. And, man, I remember when I used to think like, oh, if I just had a really cool woman supporting me in my life, I'd go off and do all these amazing things. But it's really just an excuse. We have to start with ourselves. Then the amazing women and the business opportunities and everything else comes in as a result, because they're just naturally attracted to that person you're being. So that's super cool. And I think it's important to note that you're kind of a young dude. I mean, you're 30 years old. Let's get into it. You came to the U.S. from the U.K. And what happened? How'd you grow up and how'd you make that transition over to the U.S.? And let's get into your story, man.
Yeah, it was funny. I grew up and sports in England, really the only sport that anyone pays attention to. Well, when I was growing up in the area I grew up is soccer or football, as it's known in England. And for some reason, I was never really that good at that. And I had some cousins from America who were basketball players, and I got into basketball. And that was during the time of, you know, the legendary Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and all those guys. And so it was actually on TV. So I got to watch that and kind of have my idols there. And so I always played basketball, but it was never that big in England. And I played for England. So, you know, I grew up and got very, you know, my parents took me and I had a coach and I would train multiple times a week and played up in age groups and stuff like that. And I was obsessed. I'm a very, when I get into something, I get very obsessed. So I practiced every day and you know, managed to get really good and wanted to come over to the States to play. And the best way to do that was as a foreign exchange student when I was 16. And so I actually wanted to leave when I was 14, but my parents made me finish school. We finish at 16. We do 2 years of college and then 4 years of university. They're separate entities. And that's the structure. So at 16, you're free, essentially. You can go into the work world. And so I came over on a foreign exchange and came over and ended up in a really small high school as a three-sport athlete, competed in those. And then my senior year hit with some serious adversity. I didn't get to play high school sports. The school board decided that I was recruited, which turns out I was. I had no idea. But the basketball coach had seen my profile international exchange student and kind of hand selected me to go to that school and found me a home. And I didn't know any of this had gone on, but that all came out and we tried to battle it. We even went to court. We spent a ton of money trying to get it. And then basically the sports board ruled that I was ineligible. So my senior year, I didn't get to play the sport I'd grown up loving. And so being competitive, I had to find something else to compete in. And when I found out that powerlifting though, was a sport, I realized I could compete in that. And up until that point, I'd only been training with weights for my sport, but I'd always been obsessed with the strongman on TV and stuff like that. I always thought it was really cool. And so I just had this passion and this love for lifting weights. And I was always competitive in the weight room. That's just who I am. And it turns out I was, you know, because of that, I was pretty strong. And then that led me down that path. And so it's funny how one thing leads to the other. And I always say this, in every bad situation, we always think it's like the end of the world and we don't understand why whatever is happening is happening. But, you know, everything is the way it's supposed to be. And everything, anytime anything bad happens, something beautiful is always born out of it. And so, you know, at that time, I thought my whole life was over. I wanted to go to college and play basketball. I had dreams of playing in the NBA and all of this. And but then all of a sudden, this lifting, you know, powerlifting as a sport came into my radar. And it turned out I was pretty good at it. And it took me on a different journey. But I never at that age could have predicted where I would have gone. And, you know, so for me, it felt like the world was over. I didn't get to play basketball. But in reality, it opened up another door that has led me to where I am today.
Yeah, that's so cool. I mean, it's such an important concept to be able to be flexible and just instead of being a basketball, this aggressive basketball guy, you just take that mindset, take those skills and expertise and then start putting it into another area. And that's what I did. I competed in Brazilian jiu-jitsu at a pretty good level. And it just got to the point where there's no money in that, at least in basketball. You wanted to become a pro basketball player, but there's no money in Brazilian jiu-jitsu really, except for the top guys. And I was just getting so injured. And now I'm just putting that into business. And you actually ended up training at the world famous, at least I'm pretty sure it's famous around the world, the West Side Barbell Club with Louis Simmons. Can you talk about your experience there and how you went on to break 2 world records?
Yeah, so I'd been lifting for about 6 years, and my first year was a wake-up call, and I went to nationals and finished 17th, and I looked at my coach, whose name was Brent Mysel at the time, and I said, this is never going to happen again. A year later, I go back to nationals, and I compete against a guy who is from West Side Barbell. He got the better of me, and that's when I first met Louis Simmons, and we used a lot of Louis' training principles, and so if anyone trains and they use bands or chains or boards for partial press or specialty bars, you know, safety squat bar, football bar, fat bars. All of that stuff has been popularized by Louis Simmons, whether you know it or not. So I get to meet Louis and, you know, he looked at me and he said, you guys are going to be going back and forth for a long time. Because Mike, the guy I was competing against, was young also. We were both just in our teens at that time. And here we were 1 and 2 at nationals. And so fast forward about 6 years later, I was now a top 10 lifter, you know, on the world record level. I'd crept onto those numbers. I was within, I think I was number 10 or 9 on the all-time list, biggest totals. And I really hit a sticking point in my training. I'd moved out to Kentucky. I took a job running a health club out there. And my training had really taken a dive because I just didn't have the training partners. And anytime you're lifting powerlifting, you're only as good as your team, really. And so I started beginning to make the trip over to Westside. It was a 4.5 hour drive each way. So it was about a 9 hour round trip. I would drive there on a Friday. I would train for a couple hours and then I'd turn around and drive back home. And after doing that for a month and a half or so, Louis looked at me and said, "You're crazy. You just need to move here." And so it wasn't much of a tough decision, but I basically packed up shop and moved there. And he promised me, "If you move here, I'll make you a world record holder." And, you know, for me, it was one of those things where I was at a point where my training had been very stagnant and I was getting very frustrated. And I had the thought process of, I'm either going to move and go all in and see if I got what it takes to be a world record holder, or I'm going to stay here and give up that dream. And I have to come to reality. It was a fork in the road. And, you know, either direction would have been the right direction. I chose to pack up shop. So I left the job running the health club, moved to Columbus, Ohio, which is, if anyone's been there, there's not much else there apart from the football team. There's really no reason to be in Columbus, Ohio, apart from this gym. And over those over the 4 years I was at Westside Barbell, I grew very close with Louis, and we're still good friends now. But he took me from where I was to a world record holder in the time as promised, and showed me a lot of things about perseverance and mental fortitude. And that was one of the biggest lessons I learned from him. I used to think potential in powerlifting was genetic. You know, I used to think that you had to have the right muscles and you had to have the strength. And I used to think like potential in business was you had to be a genius, right? You had to be born really, really smart.
Sure.
And what Louis showed me was that potential is not anything to do with genetics or where you start. Potential is to do with the mind. And the most important genetics you can receive is the mindset of a champion. And he calls it the samurai mindset. But basically, to be able to focus on a goal and to do whatever it takes to get there. And, you know, you can learn anything you need to learn. You can train as long as you need to train for to become the best. And most people break mentally before they ever break physically. Most people choose things that lead them away from versus lead them towards. And these are all mental training skills. And so I was lucky enough, and in college, I actually had the benefit of being involved with sports psychology and learning lots of mental skills to train, and I was able to use that, and that's made the difference. And Louis just really emphasized that, and so he'd push me and push me as hard as he could, and I was able to handle that, and I was able to adapt and to grow. I mean, sometimes I didn't like him very much. Sometimes I wanted to quit. There was days I couldn't get out of bed. I was in so much pain. But you push through all of that with that end goal in sight. And so after 3 years there, I broke the world record, held it for about a year, broke it again myself before the guy I took it from eventually took it back. And then I retired in 2013. I squatted 1,210 pounds in my final meet, and that was my last goal, was to squat over 1,200. So I ended my career with a 1,200-pound squat and a 900-pound bench press and an 815-pound deadlift. And that was good enough for me. I decided it was time to get my health in check because I really was fat, sick, and nearly dead. And so that, you know, from there, I spiraled around, lost 100 pounds, competed in bodybuilding. And those skills that I mastered over the 10 years of powerlifting really catapulted my success with the weight loss and, you know, sticking to the diet and doing all of those things. And, you know, we mentioned before the show that all that stuff carried over into the business front and allowed me to become a very successful entrepreneur as well.
Yeah. And I heard you say before that, you know, you came up on this other fork in the road after being with Louis and breaking the world record twice, and you had to make another choice. And what Louis Simmons taught you as far as having that samurai mindset and what you learned earlier from your sports psychology training and in university, you used that to transition into something else. Now, was that just the bodybuilding, or was that the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey?
No, my entrepreneurial journey had started during the powerlifting career. I had to figure out a way to support the lifestyle of a powerlifter. And so early on, I got into basically, while I was running the health club, I became obsessed with marketing and figured out that the skill set is not in being the technician, but in being the person who markets and sells the service. And so I became obsessed with marketing and had begun doing a lot of online stuff and working with people online. And so it had great success. But the thing that was interesting was, is when I broke the world record, you know, it was a bittersweet moment because I'd been building up to this for 10 years. I had a great business, and I was pulling in more money than a 20-something-year-old should be. Lived in a house. I was married. I was, you know, supposed to be happy. And I wasn't. And I was chasing this goal of breaking the world record. And I thought that by breaking the world record, I'd be happy. I thought that I'd have everything, you know. And yeah. What happened was I broke the world record, and I realized nothing changed. You know, it wasn't like something magical happened. There was no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And I started to tear my life apart. I ended up quitting the job that I was doing, getting a divorce. All these things that I thought were making me unhappy, I started to just slice through. And of course, I held on to powerlifting because at that point in time, that was my identity. That was who I really become, was this huge powerlifter. I was 320 pounds. I was the strongest man in the world. And I held on to this identity. And so I kept that for like a year. And then I realized that like every time I looked in the mirror, I was miserable. I had severe sleep apnea, wake up in the middle of the night, choking, couldn't breathe, thought I was going to die. So I wouldn't sleep. And then I got paranoia from not sleeping. My body was just breaking down, and all the signs were there. I had a friend who passed away from a heart attack who was in his 20s. I had another guy, a friend who had a stroke. I just saw the writing on the wall. I knew I was going to be next. And I knew that was what was making me unhappy, but I just couldn't let go because that was who I was. And so I decided that I would squat the 1200 and then that would be it. And I remember when I stood up with that weight, immediately after, it was like a huge, like, it's funny, obviously literally, but metaphorically too, it felt like a huge weight had been lifted off my shoulders because all of a sudden I knew that I was done with that lifestyle.
Yeah,
you know, I was done with force feeding myself to throwing up and then shoving the food back down to like make sure I grew. I was just done. And that is when my whole life took a shift. And I, like I said, I've been successful in business, but a lot of people chase a goal thinking that it will change their life. And some people do it with money. Some people do it with finding the perfect partner, right? They're always woman after woman after woman looking for that perfect partner. And the truth is, and I said this, it changed the game. Success, we always think of it as reaching a destination, but what real success is just making progress. And what I ignored the entire time I had been lifting was the enjoyment of the training, you know, was the process and the ups and the downs and the meet after the meet after meet and the people that I'd met. And I had never been present. I was always looking forward. I was never looking in the rearview mirror. I wasn't grateful for the things that I had, for the things that I achieved. I hadn't seen how far I had come from when I came over as a 170-pound basketball player. I was now a 320-pound world's strongest man. You know, I didn't see any of that. And so, you know, it took another year after breaking the record for me to really get my head straight and figure out that, like, you know, I'm killing myself and this is what's making me unhappy. And so I had to become a chameleon. I had to shed the identity. I had to step away from that, you know. And for me, one of the keys to success is being in an environment that breeds success. And so that's why I implanted myself inside Westside.
Sure.
Because I knew I could become a world record. But I knew if I wanted to lose 100 pounds, I needed to be somewhere else. And so I actually moved out to San Diego, California. I'm very health conscious out here. But more than anything, I think just the people I knew out here in the health industry were, you know, were focused on longevity versus competition. And so just surrounding myself in that environment, also work-wise, I moved out here to be around other really successful entrepreneurs that I knew. And so I implanted myself. I removed myself from the toxic environment. And I don't say that as in like Westside is a toxic environment, because if you want to be the world record powerlifter, that's where you got to go. And if you want to be a top athlete, you know, they have MMA fighters, their UFC fighter Matt Brown trains there and people like that. Like, if you want to be the best athlete you can be, to me, there's no better place you could go than Westside Barbell. But for me, that I achieved everything I wanted to achieve and it was time to move on. And I knew that I couldn't remain there and lose the weight and step away from the platform. I knew that if I stayed there, I would continuously get drawn back into that cycle. And so I had to remove myself from the environment. And I think that that's a key to success in anything. If you want to be successful, you got to put yourself in an environment that's going to force success. And so, you know, that's what I ended up doing. And that was that transition. And so the business side of stuff, you know, that really took a turn when I came out here as well. Obviously, the cost of living is higher, so you have to figure out how to make more money.
Yeah.
But being around entrepreneurs on a more regular basis, being around guys who had 8, 9, 10-figure companies, allowed me to see their habits and their living situations and the way they manage their companies. And I ended up, you know, running a 10-figure company in 2014, and being able to see the structure of how that operates and how the money comes in, and you know, the overhead and the organization for hiring and firing and all of those things. Like, you don't get that experience unless you implant yourself in that, and your reality is all that you know. And so if you want to change your life, you have to change your reality, and the way to do that is be around people who've already achieved what you want to achieve. And that's the key, you know, change your environment and then surround yourself with successful people.
Yeah, that's such a powerful lesson, and one that took me a long time to get. And one that, if you're listening to this right now, this is something that you need to take to heart, because you can't see, you can only think about your life, about your opportunities, with where you are, with what you currently believe. But if you want to expand what's possible, just like you, AJ, you went from like 10th in the world to becoming like the world record holder twice and the world's strongest man twice. And that wouldn't have been possible had you not gotten into that place of that breed success. And then when you found it was time to move on, you did that. You said, okay, I'm done with this part of my life. My body's had enough. I've won the world record twice and nothing really changed that much for me. It's time to move on to the next phase. You moved out to San Diego. You started getting around all these financially successful people and people who are focused on longevity. So that's the first lesson. What about some other lessons that you can impart to the listeners to help them start to get that success mindset?
Yeah, you know, for me, one of the biggest things you have to embrace as an entrepreneur or as an athlete or anything is a sense of delayed gratification. You have to understand, you have to be in it for the long term. You have to be in for the long-term gains. And most people are so short-term focused. You know, they want results tomorrow. They want to make quick money.
Man, yesterday.
Yeah, and the problem is that everything takes time. To become a world record powerlifter, it took me 10 years. To build, depending on what type of company you're building, but let's talk about, you know, a profitable company, because a lot of companies, startups and stuff, operate in the red and they just take money to user base. But if we're building a for-profit company where we're profitable basically from day one, I mean, you're looking at 3 to 5 years to get to seven figures conservatively. You can do it quicker if you have the connections and different things, but you're looking at 2 to 3 years because you have to put in the work. You have to build the audience. You have to create the content and the products, and things don't just blow up overnight. And every now and again, like, you hear of an overnight success story, and then you actually go back and look, and it's like their 10th business that they've tried. Or they were successful in this area, and then they just broke off into a new niche with a certain thing, and then they had all the support there. So overnight success stories, people miss that there were 20 years of work and grind to become an overnight success story. And so what you have to get comfortable with is being uncomfortable. And anytime you're comfortable, it's easy just to plod along and just to do the basics and, you know, not push and not go hard. But when you're uncomfortable, it forces you to grow. And so delayed gratification is just knowing that you got to put in the work. You got to push forward. You got to know that long term, you're going to get to where you want to go. And you can't compromise just to make a short term gain, right? You have to know your values. You have to know where you stand. And everything should be guided by that, even if it's turning down a big opportunity. One of my friends owns a sports beverage company, and I won't disclose it just in case this is confidential. I don't want to put them in a trouble spot. But they were approached by Walmart to put their drink in Walmart. But they are on the health conscious side, and so they want their product in Whole Foods. Now, putting your product in Walmart is a surefire way to not get your product in Whole Foods.
Right.
And so they sought counsel of their board and asked, what should we do? This is a huge opportunity to go national with Walmart. And the board said, look, we don't want to jeopardize the opportunity to get into Whole Foods. This is our market. This is who we want to target. So yes, this is a great opportunity. We're not really in a position to fulfill national chain Walmart right now anyway. It would put us pretty slim with production. And so let's be honest with them and let's just tell them where we are, that we don't feel we're ready for a national rollout. and let's just have the conversation again in 8 to 12 months. And so they turned down a massive opportunity. Walmart, like, I mean, most businesses want their product in Walmart.
Sure.
But because they have this long-term focus, they know who their audience is. They didn't want to compromise that for a short-term gain with Walmart. Because if they can get into Whole Foods and they can roll out into other health food stores and they can be the leader in that category, which is what they're trying to do, to them, they fulfill their mission. And I think that that's so important. I think that takes some real balls to turn down an opportunity that magnitude. And a lot of people do that, right? So I see a lot of business owners will partner with a company that they don't necessarily believe in because that company will give them a promotion. And then a few years down the road, they're having to backtrack on why they supported or partnered with or teamed up with a certain person or company. And so you have to make those decisions. And it's the same with dating. A lot of people date with no intention of ever finding a wife.
Sure.
You know, which is totally cool. No judgment on the way a person chooses to date. What usually they're saying is they want to find a long-term partner, but they're settling for all these short-term relationships. And it's the same in fitness, right? People want quick results. So they'll do extreme diets, fad diets that they can't keep up with. But you're not going to stop eating every other day. You're not going to only eat salads if you're not like vegan, right? Vegetarian.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
So picking an extreme diet and then expecting to live the rest of your life is ridiculous. Going from one night stand to one night stand and expecting to find your wife or a husband is not going to happen. You know, same in business. And these are principles that carry across all areas of your life. And I think is that the key. If you could just get comfortable with being uncomfortable and understand delayed gratification, that don't compromise in the short term when you know what long-term vision is, that is huge, you know, and it will steer you away from shortcut decisions. I see this right now with Facebook. A lot of people are getting kicked off of Facebook advertising, to give you a very specific example.
Sure.
And it's because they're using practices that Facebook said they don't like, but they were getting away with them.
Oh.
And it's like, look, if Facebook says we don't want you to do this, then just don't do it. Even if you could get away with it, it's a short-term gain to get away with it. See, a lot of people would just go from shady practice to shady practice to shady practice. And they're always terrified because they're terrified they're going to get caught, right? So in business, they do this. In relationships, same thing, you know, for cheating and cheating and cheating. And the whole time, they're just living this paranoia, this fear of getting caught. But if you just did things right in the first place and said, okay, it might take a little bit longer, but we're going to do it right so we never have to do it again. We never have to be worried. Life becomes a lot easier. And I think at the Change of Game event, the term real, raw, and relevant was thrown around a lot. But it's about being authentic, right? It's about always living in truth. And I think that that's key, is delayed gratification, always living in truth.
Yeah, that's so interesting because that's something that keeps coming up. I interviewed someone who is very successful. He's a bit older than both of us, but he started in business at 18 and sold his company at 27 to a Fortune 500 company and never really had to work again, except he found himself like listless, purposeless, unhappy, depressed. And he said that as well. That was the key. So really being able to stay true to who you are, to be congruent with your beliefs, have your actions be congruent with your beliefs and what you truly want, regardless of the temptations that come along the way. And yeah, raw, real, and relevant, and being authentic, that can be hard, man. Can you talk about how you found your niche by being AJ Roberts? Like, it's a tough thing to be honest with ourselves about who we are, about what we want to do and who we want to work with. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how you've found success like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the key that most people don't know themselves, and we talk about spiritual journeys and we talk about people getting involved in a church or getting involved in a certain spiritual practice. And to me, spirituality is self-understanding. It's the exploration of you and getting to know yourself better. And the more you know yourself, the more you can live in truth, the more you can understand why you operate and process things the way you do. We're not all the same, but there's a lot of people like us. We're not alone either. We're not like this snowflake that no one's going to get us, right?
Sure.
But what happens is we bottle our thoughts up and we live in our own minds and we create stories and we create all these things. And so when you start to explore that and you really start to understand who you are, then you can start to make your life about everything that raises you up as the individual. And you can surround yourself with the right people. You can build the correct team around you for sport, for work, for life. And so for me, figuring out what your unique genius is and where it is that you operate the best. And I had separated work and fitness and all these things for so long. And when I started to look at it, it was like, why? I have business skills that can be used over here in the fitness industry. I started in the fitness industry. I went away from the fitness industry because I chased the money. But then I felt called to come back because that's my passion and that's my love. And what I found was I was consulting with a lot of people on their marketing. And what I found was if they were involved in the health, fitness, and wellness industry, I was so passionate about helping that person. Like, I wanted to pick up the phone and, hey, how's everything going? How did that campaign go? Like, I wanted to follow up. I wanted to be on top of that person because I was genuinely 100% interested because it fired me up at my core, you know?
Yeah.
But then I was consulting with someone who had a law firm.
Right. Completely away from the fitness industry. Yeah.
And the information I gave them was the same. The success they were having was unbelievable. But personally, I just didn't care. And I knew that was a problem because you have to love your customers. And I knew that the issue was not that it wasn't that I didn't care about them, but I just didn't care about their business because it wasn't in a field that lit me up. And I think that that's the key to success. And I just hung out on Necker Island with Richard Branson. And, you know, one of the things that I observed while I was there, and I knew this, but I'd never seen it in person. And when you're around Richard, you really get to see what makes Richard Branson. But to him, life is about play. Turning every situation into play, into fun, and not compromising, you know, your core for anything. And so that's what led me to figuring that out, was getting to know myself, figuring out what my unique genius is. There's tools you can do it. Kobe Index is one. Wealth Dynamics is another by my friend Roger Hamilton. There's different courses you can take, and there's books on this and figuring out what it is that you're unique and what you're brilliant at. And the more you can live in that, the more you can do that, the better. Some people are very creative. I'm a very creative person. I have terrible follow through. I can create the biggest idea, the blueprint for the idea, but actually implementing it, that's where I need a project manager.
Right.
You know? And you start to realize a lot of people are solo entrepreneurs in today's world. We get the ability to do that, to work for ourselves. But most people own their own job. And to go from owning your own job to being a real business owner, you have to understand that you are either CEO or you're not. And that's why no tech startup in the Silicon Valley gets an investment unless they have a founding partner, because no one person can do everything. And it's very hard for me to admit that. Like, I believe I could do everything and I can do it better than anyone else. You know, that's been my whole life like that, but it's not true. And once you can start to see the areas that I don't want to say fail at, but they're weaknesses for you. Could you make them stronger? Yes. Do you need to? No, because someone else will love that. And when I was at Tony Robbins' Date with Destiny, he said, you know, who here hates cleaning, right? And every entrepreneur's hand goes up like, boom, like, yeah, I hate cleaning. No one wants to clean the house, scrub the toilets. And then he said, who in here loves cleaning? And a bunch of people raised their hand. He spoke to a lady. She owned a cleaning company. For her, cleaning was meditation. Put her in a hypnotic state and cleared her mind, and she just loved the presentation of giving someone a clean house. To her, it was the greatest gift she could give. And it's a perspective of a situation. And I think that that is key, is knowing yourself. And when you know yourself and you dig in, why do I respond like that? Why do I get upset when someone cuts me off in traffic? Why do I get mad when there's a long line at Starbucks? You know, why do these things irritate me? What is that? What is the story that I'm telling myself? And there's, you know, lots of great resources you can go to, Tony Robbins, Byron Katie, and the list goes on of people that can start to help you understand who you are and why you operate. It goes back to the mindset, you know, it goes back to knowing your stories that you've been told, the environment that have shaped your beliefs, your reality, all of those things. And when you can start to unlock that stuff, man, life begins to change.
Yeah, that's such an awesome, powerful point, and reminds me of a quote I read in Michael Port's book, Book Yourself Solid. And he said that business problems are usually personal problems in disguise. And that's what you just kind of stated there. I mean, that's what I got from it. It's like, you really got to know who you are, what you're good at, what you're not good at. Hire people to do the stuff that you suck at, because there's really no need for you to spend that precious time, the thing that's most valuable and non-renewable in our lives on something that you hate doing or you just don't get good results. And I'll tell you what, AJ, I don't clean my house, man. And I hired a housekeeper, and although it's not, it's like, damn, you know, I could be spending that money somewhere else, but it's just worth it because otherwise my place is chaos, man, you know? And just powerful points. And you mentioned your story with Richard Branson, and I know you got to go because you have a call and, you know, we're coming up on our time here, but I'd like you to just maybe finish with telling the story. You had an opportunity to go to and meet Richard Branson a few years before, but you didn't do it. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then we'll wrap up with some final words.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's one of the most interesting things that even at my level, it's funny. A lot of people say, hey, Jay, you're so successful. And for the longest time, I never felt like that. And because I mentioned earlier, I was always looking forward. And so although I've achieved things that to others are just things that they can't imagine, and remember, it goes back to their reality. So, you know, when I lost 100 pounds, I competed in a bodybuilding show to have a reason to lose 100 pounds. I always have to seem to have a goal, right, to shoot towards. I have to know where I'm going if I'm going to get there. And when I stepped on that stage, my goal was to win the show. And I didn't win the show. And so I got second place. And after the show, the pictures were online and people were saying what an incredible journey it was and how inspired they were to follow it. And I felt like a failure because I didn't win. And so I had been invited to go, my previous business partner, Yannick Silver, he owns a group called Maverick 1000. It's this huge adventure group. Every year they go to Necker Island. They donate to Virgin Unite, large substantial donation to go to Virgin Unite. A few years ago, they opened up, they go for a week or 10 days. And it's, I think it's a $40,000 or $50,000 donation to Virgin Unite to be a part of that. And a few years ago, Yannick set up for the Mavericks who couldn't afford to make that kind of donation. Their business wasn't in a place where that was an affordable donation. He arranged with Richard to hold a Necker Island beach party. And so those that are there for 10 days and then for one day, everyone who is a Maverick could go and hang out at Necker Island and hang out with Richard. And so he invited me to go, and I honestly just felt that if I couldn't afford the $50,000 donation, that I didn't deserve to be there. I didn't deserve to be in the presence of Richard Branson if my business couldn't make a donation of that size to his organization. And here I am, a part of a group, and Maverick 1000, yeah, everyone in that group has to have a seven-figure business. And here I am, a part of this group. Here I am. All these people think I'm really successful. But to me, I had set up what I had defined success as and was pretty much unreachable. It made me feel as if I was a failure. And so it wasn't until I did some work. It wasn't until I'd gone through and realized that, like, if I looked at things the way I was looking at, then I would always be a failure in my mind. But if I turned my thought process, instead of always looking forward, look backwards and where I was and where I've come to and live in the present, in the now, I would enjoy massive amounts of success. And when I did this drill, I actually broke down in tears of joy because all of a sudden I experienced all of the things I'd been suppressing, all of that joy and the happiness I'd been suppressing from all these amazing things that I've achieved in my life. When I finally let go and finally redefined my definition of success to progress versus a destination, all of a sudden, you know, I realized how silly it was of me to be looking at that situation. And so you still had to make a donation to go with the Mavericks. And so I made the donation and I went and hung out with Richard Branson. And I found myself in many situations connecting with him and talking with him, which was a surprise, but it was amazing. And I felt like I belonged. And everyone else had been telling me that for a long time, but finally I felt like I belonged. And, you know, what's interesting is I think that a lot of people listening may not feel like they're successful or may not feel as if they've achieved much in their life. But if they actually look back, and we did this at Change the Game, look back at where you were 3 years ago. And Dan Sullivan calls this the reverse gap. But if you look at where you were and you take check on where you are today, have you grown? And for most of us, we have. The fact that you're listening to a podcast suggests that you are seeking information to grow. And as long as you're moving forward, you're successful. As long as you're constantly improving, you're successful. And to me, that was a huge shift in my mindset, basically, in the last year. And so it's allowed me to enjoy and experience things differently now, because everything to me is a gift. Everything is a blessing. And I live an amazing lifestyle, and now I get to enjoy it. And, you know, it doesn't change me setting huge goals and chasing them, but now I enjoy the process, and I take the ups and the downs, and I emotionally don't go on that roller coaster.
Right. And it's been awesome.
That's cool, man. And yeah, at the end of the day, we're just ourselves. And like you said, the success equals progress. I love that mantra, that idea, because it's so important. And very cool story about Richard Branson. I actually got to meet him because I trained his wife a bunch of times when she comes in town in Miami Beach. And I've trained his cousin for a long time. So very cool, man. Hopefully you got him to add in some strength training to his tennis and his kite surfing. But he's so sold on that stuff and not really into the exercising at all. But AJ, I know you have to go. Thanks so much for sharing your time today. If you enjoyed this conversation with AJ, make sure you go to ajroberts.com. You can find out all about him, about his barbellbusiness.com. If you're in the fitness business, he has this amazing video show where he's with Tim Ferriss and all these other successful people just talking about what it takes to make it in fitness. And AJ, man, you're a really cool guy, and just a pleasure to connect with you, and thank you so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Ted, and I'll reach out. We'll talk soon.
Awesome.